Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Really, what is the big deal? They're frisbees. She likes to chew on them. Better she should chew on them than chew on you.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Which is
Absolutely.
What she does.
Yeah.
She's not hurting people when she's hurting frisbees. And Carol said, it's just she eats the plastic. It's no good. And I go, what? Stop. What are you worried about? Last night in the middle
of better than Wegmans hash browns.
In the middle of the second period, the dog threw up all over the dog's cage.
Oh, no.
Threw up all over the cage. 100 bits of plastic.
God. This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Plausibly live and from the HM level of chatter on the corner of Wisconsin and Jennifer Streets Northwest, a block from the Maryland line inside the District of Columbia, the capital of the United States of America. We have Chris Saliza, we have Leon Harris, we have Michael Kornheiser. Nigel is going to run the board and do the news. Brian Windhorst will join us later. So yesterday I said at the top of the show, I said, look, we're offering breakfast. All right, where chatter is now open for breakfast. We got a great breakfast menu. I said, but just not Wednesday. That's the one day we're not going to be open for breakfast. We're going to do construction in the kitchen, redo the kitchen. Thursday, Friday, the rest of time.
Right.
Come for breakfast.
Yeah.
So two guys downstairs show up for breakfast, and
terrible
one
listeners.
Is from Harrisonburg, Virginia, and one is from Raleigh, North Carolina. They had dinner here last night. They loved it. They went to the Nats game. They came for breakfast, and I said, there's no breakfast. They said, we didn't listen yesterday. I said,
delicious.
So this is what
happened. It's BYOB.
Yeah.
Bring your own breakfast.
We're giving
around.
Him tea. We're giving
there's
him
breakfast around.
You just
I got
go across
breakfast
the street.
Somewhere else. Yeah.
You go across the street, you bring the breakfast in.
Yeah, bring it in.
So before we begin the show, everyone makes fun of the fact that I have these David Aldridge moments. I say, why do you care that you saw David Aldridge on TV? You've known David for 30 years. Why do you care?
And you know he's on television.
I had another one. I think it was Monday afternoon. Monday afternoon, I'm a Channel 4 guy.
Yes, you are.
Big time.
I've heard that.
Monday afternoon, I get home from the PTI show. And who's filling up the screen on Channel 4? But
Harris.
Leon.
You checked Leon it out,
Harris.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, in a gray suit and a blue tie. And I said, wow, look at that. Leon's on TV. Leon's been on TV
been
for
on
30
TV,
years.
30
it's
years
literally time. His job.
But Leon's, so how does it feel? How did it feel?
And you know what? A little funny at first, you know, because it's like, I don't know, it's almost like getting a new bike. Yeah, you do the same thing, but the handle's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, the gears are in a different place. But it felt great, you know, and getting a chance to sit down with Doreen on Monday
Doreen Gensler,
the first
yeah.
time doing the 6 o'clock was a lot of fun. She's a real sweetheart.
Yeah.
They've been so good to me. I got to tell you, they've been so welcoming. It's been incredible. You can see I'm
you're wearing your Channel 4 hat. Yeah.
I went to the Nats game last night, wore my hat. Oh, Michael, you might appreciate this. Remember when you first played your with your first Little League team? And you get your hat, you know, and your Hoyt Wilhelm glove, and you go to sleep with it.
Hoyt Wilhelm glove.
And you sleep with it. You never take it off. That's how I've been with this hat. I've got my news forehead.
So we're in here yesterday, and the guy who does, I'm going to get the name wrong, so please just correct me. Just, Michael, look it up on the internet or something. I think his name is Mike Heideck. I think that's right.
Yeah.
He does the early on local CBS
uh-huh.
on Channel 9 here. And we begin to talk, and he introduces himself.
Mike's a good guy.
And he says to me, I know you're a four guy. I said, yeah, I am. I'm a four guy. He says, you don't know who I am, do you? I said, well, I'm a four guy. That's what I do. I watch the early five. That's what I do. But it was great see you on TV.
Well, I wanted to rub that in on you to some degree. You know, you broke 100 at Augusta.
I broke 100
twice.
I got a chance to rub up against Wendy Rieger.
So that's really
wow.
good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Winning. Hashtag winning.
That's, yeah, fuck it. Yeah, that's great. That's great. All right. So now we can start the show.
Kicking out a windshield.
And I'm going to. Yeah.
No. Wendy, just started to kick the windshield
the
out.
The most dangerous woman.
She's the best.
See, they do these stupid new ads now. They got the new guy as the world's most interesting man. It doesn't work at all.
No, it
he
doesn't.
He doesn't have the look.
Yeah,
he looks like Michael Phelps. It doesn't work.
It really does.
But if Wendy did ads for the world's most dangerous woman, it would work.
That is a title that she has truly earned.
Yeah, it would totally work. So yesterday we're on the PTI show, and the game for the day is the toss-up game in which the producer says, who do you want, this guy or that guy?
Hmm.
And the toss-up is, do you want John Wall or do you want Isaiah Thomas? And I say, look, Isaiah Thomas cleaned him out in the first game. John Wall is going to have a bounce back game.
Yeah.
He's going to be much better. But if you're asking me, I want Isaiah Thomas because they're at home in Boston, mm-hmm. because they've won five playoff games in a row, and because if Isaiah Thomas doesn't have a great game, they can't win. They're just not good enough to win if he doesn't have a great game. And Wilbon says, I not only agree with everything you're saying, but I find it extraordinary that Isaiah Thomas, given the fact that his sister was just killed in a car accident, mm-hmm. and he's out there playing, that's an even better story. And then he says, but I'm going with John Wall. And I go, I don't know. And he goes, I'm going with John Wall.
He probably didn't know that yesterday was his sister's birthday.
Yeah.
And that was what
23rd would have been her 23rd birthday. Yeah.
So John Wall has a bounce back game. Mm-hmm. He has a game that you're supposed to win. 40 points and 13 assists. Yep. You cannot do much better than that, except Isaiah Thomas does. Except Isaiah Thomas goes for 53. He gets 20 in the fourth quarter. Which lasts 12 minutes. He gets 9 in the overtime. They win by 10 in overtime. It's impossible. Yeah, it's you amazing. Can't do that. And John Wall, in that same period of time, gets 5 points. So that is a total of 29-5 head-to-head. And ESPN this morning showed a matchup when they guarded each other. Hmm. When they guarded each other, 16-2 for Isaiah Thomas.
No, really?
16-2. Wow. So without any disparagement of John Wall, whose numbers were terrific, that other guy won the game.
He was outstanding. I mean, this has been true for a lot of the season. But in the fourth quarter, he just scores and scores and scores. Takes every shot. And again, reminder,
he's 5'9".
Well,
then 5'9".
He's essentially my size.
Yeah, you know? I mean.
Well, someone's got to come up with an answer for why a 5'9 guy in the playoffs can get to the rim.
All the time.
I didn't see the numbers, but I would bet.
And Gortat goes to defend him. Gortat is over a foot taller than he is and makes legitimate attempts to defend him. And Boston.
And I would bet that more than 2/3 of his shots were in the paint.
I'm going to look at the stats and just see how many three-pointers he took.
I would bet that 2/3 of his shots had to be going to the rim.
So he was, I mean, also, by the way, 18 for 33 is pretty darn good from the field. Mm-hmm. 5 for 12
Do you know how many
three.
Shots Kobe Bryant would have to take to get 53 points? 65 shots. This guy is getting it on 33 shots. He got 53 points. The other day, he took 23 shots to get 33, when Wall took 20 to get 20. Again,
Wall, 32 to get 40. Although, look,
that's
Wall,
he had a great game. And Bradley Beal was giving him no help.
Bradley
Beal was, I think, 1 for 9 from 3
points.
That's
right.
Okay, so again, I'm not being critical of John Wall. I'm saying the other guy's better.
Yeah.
But he's better.
But in spite of the fact that Isaiah Thomas got 20 points in the fourth quarter, the Wizards still had the lead with, 30 seconds to go in the game. They could have still won that
game. And in regulation time, with 2 shots at what would have been buzzer beaters, both Wall and Beal missed.
Missed. Yep. Missed.
Both Beal's, Wall and Beal
missed. Beal had about a 9-footer that he airballed.
Well, and Wall was like on the elbow. He was about 15 feet, 16
That's
feet
a
down.
Game. That's a game the Wizards should have won.
I'm looking at the box score, and I mean, if I told you this box score in terms of output from these guys, tell me what you would think. Markieff Morris had 16. Otto, 13-9. Gortat had 14-10. Wall, 40-13. Now, the one down is Beal only had 14, but then they got Jason Smith had 10, Kelly Oubre had 12. A game like that,
supposed
if I gave you those, you'd say we won.
You're supposed to win. And the Wizards now, they gave up 129.
Yeah.
You cannot win. Paul Westhead no longer coaches in the league. You cannot win.
But they had a chance. They
should have won.
If Wall's shot at the elbow at the end of regulation had gone in, it'd be a completely different conversation, right?
But what you said before, the extraordinary circumstances, none of us knows how someone else is affected by tremendous trauma in their lives. Mm-hmm. None of us knows. But you look at Isaiah Thomas in the moments since this terrible thing happens to his sister.
Yeah.
And he seems to be saying, you know, take the load off Mary, put the weight on me.
Yeah.
He's been great.
And I think I heard a discussion from Brad Stevens saying that they thought going into the game he wouldn't be able to play. And there was questioned whether or not he would be up to it.
Well, he also spent most of the day in an oral surgeon's chair getting his tooth repaired.
And before game one, he flew all the way back
That's right.
from Washington State.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so it's really... It's an amazing thing.
But again, they're the number one seed. They're the number one seed.
Yeah, but the Wizards are still in this.
Yeah, Wizards, I mean, you hold they're still serve, in it.
You know,
and if, yeah, if you're the Wizards, you say, we've gotten out to great starts. We had an opportunity to win both these games, and we're going home where we've beaten the Celtics twice. Don't you think that they have to say, well, okay, we're still okay in the series?
Sure, but that they, you also have to see last night as a missed opportunity. I mean, that was it. They were ahead the whole game. They looked the better team.
But again, one bucket changes the entire conversation. If Walt shot with seconds to go, gone in, we'd be having a whole different conversation.
That's right. Yeah. We will we'll do the Nats later in the show because I think we should get to Adam Jones. I think we should do the whole Adam Jones thing. Adam Jones last night, and warmly and somewhat predictably and correctly, was given a standing ovation by the fans at Fenway Park. Actually. Yeah, and he handled it very, very well. The president of the Red Sox came over and said, we are very sorry for what happened. We'll do everything we can not have. It went to the mayor. It went to the mayor of Boston and the commissioner of baseball and all of that being tremendously condemnatory, as they should, of whoever in the stands, however many and whoever in the stands, yelled racial epithets at Adam Jones. I felt that when Adam Jones said people like that should be fined $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, I think he needs to realize that not everybody makes Major League Baseball salaries.
Right.
And no court in the land is going to actually do that. But this was a good moment for baseball until the baseball game, until they threw it.
Was it the next batter?
Machado.
It was like the next batter.
Threw at Machado.
Yeah. All that good feeling.
Threw at Machado. When is... They have 12 more games.
Yeah.
They play 12 more times.
The city earns all this goodwill across America. When you see that display, they come out and show Adam Jones that love. And then
Machado went nuts.
Oh, yeah.
Filled rant.
Yes. Yes.
My favorite part is it says, so there's this long rant. I mean, if you're going, well, we're not going to read the Machado rant because we can't.
He
goes through this long rant, and then this is my favorite. Informed of Machado's comments, Sale shrugged. Whatever, man, said Sale, who didn't discuss the intention of his pitch. Quote, not losing any sleep tonight.
Well. Chris Sale averaging like 90 strikeouts a game.
Yeah.
ERA is under 2.
Yeah, right.
He threw behind Machado. Yeah.
And what was the manager's name? The manager?
John Farrell.
So he comes up and he goes, well, what do you expect? He threw 115 pitches.
He missed one.
So that was in the first inning.
Yeah. No chance.
He did this in the first inning.
This is going to go on.
Oh,
this
go
is
on
because Machado's hard slide into Dustin Pedroia, and this is going to go on. Yeah. And by the way, Showalter he's a baseball guy too, and he's going to have his guys throw it. It's not I don't know what you do. It's not going to stop.
Should the commissioner step in?
I don't know that that will mean anything.
I don't. I mean,
if somebody gets, if somebody loses an
advance,
eye,
well, what they say in advance, we will suspend you for 50 games if you do that. I mean,
yeah, they can.
But
warn.
If the entire country knows going into the game that somebody's going to get beaned, that means that the commissioner's got to know it too.
Everybody knows.
Of course. So everybody knows.
And he's not. But no one is. The night before, the Orioles hit.
Yeah.
Didn't
in
they
the
hit
hip.
Mookie?
Yeah, yeah. They hit Mookie Betts
right
in the hip.
Right in the hip. Yep. And this one was thrown behind Machado. Not to hit him, but to scare him. Yeah.
The Mookie Betts, I mean, the what I had read of it, the Mookie Betts thing was seen as sort of the
end of
the last chapter. Right? Like, okay, now he got hit. Now it's obviously not.
Wasn't. And Chris Sale, and let me say this about Chris Sale, who came over from Chicago. Chris Sale is the guy who cut up all the uniforms last year.
Yeah, that was a little odd.
He cut up all the uniforms because he didn't like the way they fit on his arm when he had to pitch, so he cut up everybody's uniform. So it's, to me, it's 50-50. I think John Farrell wanted Chris Sale to throw that pitch, but I think Chris Sale was happy to throw that pitch.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how else you look at this stuff in baseball. If people get plunked in the can, okay. No. And if you throw behind them wide enough so that they can't lean into it,
but the first shot,
somebody's
going to
get hit in the head.
The first shot,
somebody's going to get hit in the head.
There was all that weird back and forth between Pedroia, and we talked about it on the show, but Pedroia and Machado, I didn't do it. It was the pitchers doing it.
This is not going to end.
But it honestly seemed like everything was done. I mean, Pedroia had reached out to the Orioles. Even Zach Britton, who'd been highly critical of Pedroia, said, it's all good. Everything is done. And then that happens last night.
Yeah, but Machado didn't help things by taking 30 seconds to run the bases
after he hit a home run. Yeah. It's going to go on.
No.
It's going to go on, and Adam Jones is probably sitting there thinking, what are you guys
doing? Is that one of these craziest,
what are you doing?
quote-unquote, unspoken rules? Yeah. You take 26 seconds to round the bases, it's okay. You take 28, okay, I got to throw at you.
baseball, when I'm watching it with my...
If I was a pitcher on the Red Sox and Machado took that long going around, I would. I'd throw it at his hip.
Yeah.
I wouldn't throw it at his head.
Not at his head. Yeah.
No. Were you saying something?
I was, then you began to look at television
and you got distracted like a 2-year-old.
That was my Trump moment.
That
was brilliant.
We're doing a show here.
This guy was.
We have two TVs here. We got him on MSNBC and NBC.
They just showed this guy barehanded detonating an IED. It was crazy.
But we're doing a show.
Okay, right. Back to my point.
What?
Which
one? Yeah, he's like Trump and Fox and Friends.
It's true. I just got a little distracted.
Look, something shiny.
When I'm watching baseball games with my wife, like she doesn't. I'm trying to explain like all the unwritten rules of baseball, and she's like, "Why is that a what?
Yeah.
You can't steal when you're ahead by seven runs.
You can't. No.
Like there's
you
all
can't
there's
bunt
so,
a guy around right, when you're up 12-1.
Right. 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 But you can like hit a home run.
The next guy is going to get drilled
right in the head.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to go back to TV if that's
okay.
Good with
you. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Brian Windhorst. We'll get into the NBA playoffs. In greater depth, we'll avoid the Washington Wizards. We'll do everybody else when we return with Brian Windhorst. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So this is the Sherry's Berries ad, and you know, they sell a lot of stuff around Mother's Day and around Christmas. So the big holidays, they sell a lot of stuff. And
the copy says,
talk about your favorite story about your mom, your wife, or your other mom figure.
Ooh.
So, did you think Donna Reed was your other mom figure?
That was Nigel.
At some point, for me. You know, your other mom figure. Like, you know, somebody in...
Yeah, Mrs. Brady.
Somebody with a big can and mom jeans, and, you know. I know, what does that mean?
Mother Mary.
What is? Yeah. When I find myself in trouble. Yeah, Mother Mary comes to me. Talk about a mom you really admire and why. I can't. It's too long for me. Mother's Day is coming up, and Sherry's Berries is offering huge, freshly dipped strawberries, starting at $19.99 plus shipping. And right now, you can double the berries for just $10 more. You can pick your delivery date. The berries are guaranteed to arrive fresh and delicious, or your money back. You may think that you've seen gourmet dipped strawberries before, but you've never seen anything like that. These are gigantic.
They are huge.
They're gigantic, and they got a lot of chocolate.
Big as your head.
You know,
size of baby shoes.
Sweet, and they are wonderful. The only way to get this amazing berries deal starting at just $19.99 is to visit berries.com, berries.com. You click on the microphone in the top right corner. You use this code TKPOD. They always have TK Pod. It sounds so awkward to me, but other people
Pod
think it's
Pod is
normal.
Very much accepted in the nomenclature.
That's berries.com and the code TK Pod when you click on the mic. This amazing deal won't last long, and Mother's Day is right around the corner. Be sure to order now. I thought Mother's Day was this weekend, but it's apparently next weekend.
Yeah, week from Sunday, the 14th.
Yeah, I don't keep track of it all that much.
Not really on your calendar.
No, it's not. Well, it's not.
I hope
it's
Liz
not.
Calls you.
one can only hope.
Yeah.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Steve Dawson, Laura Little, who writes, in a former life I made a living as a founding member of the band Virginia Coalition, or as the drunken frat boys called us, VACO. This is a tune called Wichita Reprise. Chris thought it was Wichita Woman, and I thought it was Wichita Lineman, but it's Wichita Reprise.
It's Elaine Bennis's favorite song, Wichita Woman.
Don't know if Virginia Coalition is still with us, but I love the notion that the drunken frat boys call them VACO. They play in the great Brian Windhorst, who is in full bloom now because the NBA playoffs are on, and we will get to his book at the end of this because we always promote people who have books, and we should always tell Brian that at some point when he wants to come to Chatter, dinner is on me. Let's start with this, and it's just easier for me to do this because I know that you're with Cleveland. What in God's name is Tyronn Lue complaining about? I mean, he's the luckiest coach in the league. He walked in to the best player in basketball. What is he complaining about?
You know what? It's interesting to me that he complains about media coverage. The man who had his job before him, we were on him like flies on you know what.
Yes, I know. David Blatt.
We were very rough on David Blatt. I was very rough on David Blatt, and I just couldn't help it because he was the most arrogant coach I'd ever been encountered with. And every time he made stupid, easy mistakes, he countered them with more arrogance, and we just couldn't stand that. But we generally in the media, we've given Ty Lue an incredible wide berth, and yet, and he was a player for many years, played on championship teams. He is unusually sensitive to what I would call only very light touch by the media. I do feel what he's saying, that when you are the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, what you do and the decisions you make are more closely monitored by the fans and media at large than, say, Quinn Snyder's job as the coach of the Jazz. But Ty Lue is being paid $7 million a year.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Part of that money is when you make a mistake or you get questioned, that you deal with it. So Ty's always been very good to me, but I will say this. One of the things that happens with Ty is I don't think he reads and watches everything. So he hears things secondhand, and he'll come after you when he's upset about something, and he doesn't even have the full story. So I think Ty's being a little bit too sensitive for his situation. I agree.
All right, I'm going to continue with this. I'm just going to say if people hear banging, it's because at Chatter this morning, workermen are banging.
Right, the workermen are
full force. We're doing kitchen and stuff like that. All right, let me get back to this.
Is the chicken parmesan still on the menu?
It is for you. It is for you, okay? I taught my children a long time ago that any restaurant that's worth going to, even if it's not on the menu and you order it, they'll make it for you. As long as we make a chicken sandwich, we can make you chicken parmesan.
Okay.
Does Ty Lue not know how lucky he is? Does he not get this? Do you think that if he coached the Nets or the Orlando Magic, he would be this upset?
He also wouldn't have a $7 million a year contract.
That's right? Exactly right.
I found it. So what he's saying is, you know, that he's got the hardest job in the league, because every little bobble he makes is dissected. I got news for everybody. All of those jobs are hard. You know, it's hard to be, you know, it's hard to manage these things. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, he's being fantastically rewarded. I remember there's this coach, this old coach, his name's Hank Egan. He was Greg Popovich's coach at the Air Force Academy, okay? And he's sort of, you know, he's retired now, but he was Steve Kerr's coach. He was Mike Brown's coach at the University of San Diego. He was on the Spurs bench for a while. And whenever, he would have these moments when coaches were going crazy in these sessions, these film sessions, and complaining about the media or complaining about their boss or complaining about a player or the fans, Hank would just take a piece of chalk, walk over to the chalkboard, and write a dollar sign on it. And walk away. Because Hank, when he coached at the Air Force Academy, was not making $7 million a year. And by the time he was coaching in the NBA, making a beautiful salary as an assistant, he realized how fortunate everybody was. So if Ty Lue was ranting and raving to me about how difficult his job was, you don't go to a chalkboard anymore. I guess you'd pull up an iPad. But that's what I would put as a dollar sign and say, Ty, you're going to be just fine.
By the way, the job of coaching the Cleveland Cavaliers isn't the hardest job. It's coaching LeBron, who refuses to be coached. That's the hardest job. You can ask Mike Brown about that. You can ask David Blatt about that. I guess Eric Spoelstra escaped because Pat Riley was over his shoulder and LeBron could go right to Pat Riley. But I mean,
No, Spoelstra didn't escape.
Well, it's LeBron. LeBron's uncoachable. He's also the best player in basketball. And Ty Lue ought to say to him, thank you for winning the championship last year. Because I didn't do it.
Tony, LeBron is actually coachable. But here's the thing. He's not going to put up with he has no tolerance for somebody not being as prepared or as ready as him. So here's the thing. If you're going to coach LeBron, you better bring it to him. And you better be on your game, because if you're off, he will smell the weakness, does with the defender. He will, and so that's what happened. You know, in the finals last year, midway through Game Seven, they came to the locker room at the half, and LeBron had played a pretty good first half. He was leading the Cavs in points, rebounds, and assists, but he was not defending Draymond Green well. He was not getting out to him, and you know it's easy to forget now, but Draymond Green had one hand on that MVP trophy. He had an incredible first half, and the Warriors were up by 7 points. And they get into the locker room, and Ty Lue steps right on LeBron's toes and says, if you don't start playing better defense, we are going to lose. We need you to play better. And LeBron says, what the hell are you talking about in so many words? He actually said a lot more curse words. I'm carrying this team. And he goes, you are the reason we are losing. And LeBron ended up throwing his hands up in the air and stomping out of the locker room angry. But LeBron played better defense in the second half. So what Ty Lue will do, he will hold LeBron accountable. But if you're going to do that, whether you're Eric Spoelstra or Mike Brown or whomever, you better damn well know what you're talking about. And that was the challenge that David Blatt had. David Blatt, a lot of times, was either A, afraid to hold him accountable, or B, when he didn't know what he was talking about. So he can be uncoachable, but I think actually he will accept coaching. You just have to know what the hell you're doing.
By the way, using the word accountability, how about Paul George? How about a guy whose stock plummeted in that series against Cleveland? For all the points that he scored, they didn't win any games, and in the critical seconds, I guess in game four, when LeBron hit a three, Paul George didn't even hit the rim, and now he's got this Gatorade commercial about game over. The game's over because he didn't hit the rim.
You know what's so remarkable about that commercial is the shot that he had. It's the exact same shot. Tony, when I say it's the exact same shot, the commercial was filmed at Bankers Life Fieldhouse at that basket from that spot.
Wow.
Get the heck out of here.
That's where the commercial – I'm seriously, if you watch the commercial, it's the same shot. Now, I'll tell you, Paul George made an incredible defensive play. I know J.R. Smith went behind his back like a moron.
Yeah.
But Paul George made a great defensive play to get the ball back, to get that shot. They're not there. I think what Paul George has is he looks around and he's like, now wait a minute. All these star players have help on their team, and Paul George is dreaming of playing with another star player. He wants what LeBron has, what Durant has, and I think he'd like to not have to be the one to take that shot. But you're right. In the actual clutch of these moments, he has not delivered. And the Gatorade commercial in that vein is not a good look right now.
All right. Let me get to another series. Houston crushed San Antonio in game one. It is, of course, game one. It is not the most critical in a seven-game series. Wilbon, who has been the Spurs' greatest defender for years and years and years and always looks for a way to pick the Spurs to win the title, Wilbon says the Spurs are indeed finally old and that they're not going to win this series. Do you agree?
The matchup is bad for them. They are, I think, equipped to be a serious contender. The matchup is tough for them, Tony, because they still want to play two big men. And Houston just pulls and stretches and stretches so much. They do something that is unusual. You hear the modern game, everyone's talking about spreading the floor. It's sort of a tired phrase, spreading the floor. But they do things that are even unusual for floor-spreading teams. They don't have their players stand at the three-point line. Sometimes they have their players stand 3 or 4 feet outside the three-point line. And you say, well, that doesn't make any sense, except if you can make that shot, which their guys can. And so what D'Antoni has done is he has taken the court, which is the same dimension and has been the same dimension for 50 years or whatever, and he's actually made it even bigger. And teams are sort of forced to stay out there. And the difficulty is when you've got David Lee and LaMarcus Aldridge or Dwayne Dedman or whoever you got out there, it's hard enough for them to cover space anyway. And now the Rockets are tugging at them, and they're sort of daring them to take their big men off the court. LaMarcus Aldridge kind of got exposed a little bit defensively, for example. So I don't want to be the guy to throw the dirt on these dudes.
Right.
And Popovich is going to do what Popovich is going to do. But this is a particularly challenging matchup for them because Houston is going to pull those guys so far from their comfort zone. It's an intriguing thing. They may have to make some concessions and just try to and just say, you know what, we're going to gamble and we're going to stay home a little bit more and we're going to let those guys shoot 27-footers. And if they make them, they're going to make them. But I think that's a big factor for them.
Can I want to stay with this for a second, and I want to find out if you have an explanation for this. Mike D'Antoni was innovative and wonderful with Phoenix. I think a team that should have won a title, but they didn't win a title. With the Knicks, he was terrible. With the Lakers, he was terrible. He gets another chance at Houston. He has a point guard, which seems to be the most important thing that he needs to be the coach that he is now. With Houston, he's the runaway coach of the year. And I believe, and you and I have argued about this, not really argued, but I believe he's made James Harden the MVP. I believe that James Harden has changed his game sufficiently, and he's a great player now. How does this work with Mike D'Antoni? He's the same guy. It's got to just be personnel, right?
Personnel, and more importantly, organizational buy-in, where the organization says, okay, Mike, we are going to give you these players that fit your system. We're going to go with it. And at the start of the season, you know, they go out and they sign Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon for huge money. I was horrified at the contracts they gave these guys. Then at midseason, they go and trade for Lou Williams, who was so bad defensively the last time he was in the playoffs with the Toronto Raptors that he won Sixth Man of the Year in the playoffs, and the Raptors didn't even offer him another contract because he was so victimized by your Washington Wizards.
Yeah.
Defensively. And I got into sort of a good-hearted but legitimate argument with Daryl Morey, their GM, the day they traded for Lou Williams when he said, you know, I said I thought it was a terrible trade because Lou Williams can't defend a chair in the postseason. And Daryl said, well, you don't pay attention to how we play. It's going to work. And I said, we'll see. Guess what? Daryl's a GM for a reason. So at the beginning of the season, it was like they gave D'Antoni his players. They said, Mike, we're going to give you the players that fit what you want to do. And I'm sitting there thinking, my God, they may be the worst defensive team in the history of the NBA. Because James Harden is generally been a horrible defender. They went out and signed horrible defenders. They trade for horrible defenders. But it is a complete organizational buy-in to say, Mike, we believe in your system. We are going to give you the guys for your system. That didn't happen in New York. They were sort of half in and half out on that. And when he finally got a player that fit his system in Jeremy Lin, they ran him, you know, Carmelo sort of ran everybody out of town. And, you know, Jeremy Lin, you know, I'm not saying Jeremy Lin was James Harden or Steve Nash, but Jeremy Lin was closer to what Mike D'Antoni needed. And when he went to the Lakers, they brought him in to coach Steve Nash, but Steve Nash, unfortunately, career was over at that point. He didn't really have Steve Nash. His back gave out on him. But this is just an example of why you got to have organizational buy-in. And it's another example of why the Knicks are such an embarrassment for a joke, because you got one guy trying to pull 15 guys in a different direction up there in New York, and you don't have organizational buy-in and support. Even though Phil wasn't around for D'Antoni, it's the same situation that's been plaguing the Knicks. And if you're the Knicks or Lakers, you're saying, you know what, maybe if we had gone with what this guy wanted, we would be the ones who are in this situation today.
All right, plug your book. Plug your book, Brian.
Return of the King, on the New York Times bestseller list.
Good, congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank everyone for that. Thank you. 70% of our sales are outside the state of Ohio. And part of that's because people leave Cleveland in droves. But the other part of that is
one of them is right here.
Sorry, Leon is right here, having left Cleveland. Yeah.
The other part of it is it really is a compelling story. From the backstory that we got, we really got good support from LeBron and his agents on this because, Tony, they wanted the story of what really happened when he left Miami to be told. And he's not telling it anytime soon. So they gave us all the details of what went down. So just the transactional details of that summer, like the first five chapters were, which goes blow by blow, what was going on in private jets, what was going on in secret meetings and all this stuff. That was my favorite part of doing the book. And then I told that story about Tyronn Lue at halftime of game 7. We have all these stories about stuff that happened in huddles and happened in locker rooms and stuff because for 3 months after they won that championship, there was this euphoria over the team. And that was when we jumped in there and got all these interviews. Now, everybody's all angry at each other and everything. Ty Lue's angry.
Yeah.
David Griffin, great David Griffin, their GM, is about to walk to another job because I think he cannot believe the owner would leave him hanging without a contract and all these things. We would never get this book today. We just happened to take advantage of the euphoric period after they won. And it's a really good story, and we've gotten great support across the country for it. And we had a beautiful review in the Washington Post over the weekend.
Good.
So we really appreciated that. So thank you for allowing me to plug it, and I appreciate your listeners who I'm sure have supported it.
Thanks, Brian. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tony. Have a good week.
Brian Windhorst, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find qualified and quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We've got a lot of good music today from bands that broke up. You know, we had that, what was the Virginia band?
Voca.
Voca.
Yeah, they broke
Virginia
up.
Coalition.
This is from Devin Heritage, who writes, here's a song if you'd like to use it. We were a band from D.C. that broke up in 2008. Had a decent amount of success. The band was called The Cause. The song is called Red-Eyed Sinners. You can listen to the full songs at the end of the podcast. And Michael, if people want to send in their original music, how would they do that?
They can send it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com. And I now really want to know what's the cause that they broke up.
Oh, they
Yoko.
Were the cause.
It was Yoko.
Yoko.
Got in the way of everybody.
Yeah. Yoko, that's fun. I always actually like that. I'll use that and steal it completely. And Michael, if people want to buy our gear on our website.
Our gear, they can still find some really beautiful t-shirts, very fun tumblers, koozies, and discounted hats and sweatshirts. They can
Fantastic.
Go to shop.tonykornheiser.com.
That's not the great stuff. I'm wearing the great stuff.
Oh,
I've got yet another day of a Johnny O.
Are you
original.
Not going to run out?
Well, eventually I have to wash.
I like that
wash
one.
Them.
This I might nice have one. To buy that one.
Yeah, this
that
is nice.
I got to keep
sweater.
Asking, what are the golf shirts coming?
We have some golf shirts in.
We don't have them in your extra
in
masculine size.
Yeah, I am working on getting you a...
We got to get an XL for you.
You don't have any in Saliza size?
Extra small. Two people over the weekend said that I was fat.
What?
Yeah.
You said this last week, too, but
well,
it was only one person.
No, well, now that's three people.
Well, you're fat.
I mean,
there
the conclusion
go.
Is I'm fat.
They didn't say that you looked big behind the seats of the home plate seats?
No, they didn't. They just said
have
fat.
You, have you been
up.
In those seats yet this year?
No, I'm sort of, you know, Kevin Huff. Let's go.
Yeah.
Sylvia Garfinkel, I'm
you
waiting.
Have news?
I do indeed, and this news is brought to you by Stretch Pants. These are great. They always fit, said Chris Saliza.
Yeah. I do like an expandable waistband in my suits.
Hillary, Hillary Clinton in the news. Quote Hillary Clinton, I would be your president if the election had been on October 27th. She said, I was on the way to winning until the culmination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28th and Russian WikiLeaks raised doubts in the mind of people who were inclined to vote for me but got scared off. And the evidence for that intervening event is, I think, compelling and persuasive.
I think this needs to be said. You know, the basketball game is 48 minutes long. You were on the way to winning at 46-30, but you didn't win the game. It went into overtime, and you lost the game. You can't, there is no election. Election day isn't October 27th. It doesn't matter. You're caught in the stretch, you lose. You just can't say, I would have been except for this, 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 and this. You would have been except for the fact that you aren't. You're not the president of the United States. You're fully qualified. You've had a great career, but the American public at large in the critical electoral college area, which is how it's always been in the country, they voted for Donald Trump. Mm. And to say that, and to also say, as Hillary Clinton did yesterday, that she's promising all in her book. So she's in the book-selling business right now. She's in the book-selling business. She said a number of times, I take full responsibility for everything, but...
But you're not supposed to say but.
Let me apologize to anyone who I've offended with my remarks. That's sort of what it was. The, like, hedge, like, I take full responsibility. That said, it wasn't my fault.
Well, the thing is, even if she's right about all of that, what's the upside in saying it? There's no upside in actually saying it and saying it 6 months later. Really?
Yeah, I mean, is she right that the... James Comey, the letter saying that they have reopened the investigation and the regular release of emails from John Podesta that were illegally hacked, we believe, by Russians, the FBI and CIA says by Russian intelligence services, did that affect and hurt her at the end of the campaign? Yes.
Yeah.
Do I understand why that would be a difficult thing to deal with because it was 100% out of your hands? Yes. Does that mean anything in the broad? No. That's how it works. And that's also, how it worked out. To your point, Tony, the election was on. The election had been scheduled.
November.
Yeah. The election had been scheduled for November 8th for quite some time.
That's how it goes.
But can I tell you that what I think the bottom line is? The net effect here is A, she's selling books. That's what this is all about. And two, this is just trolling Trump. This is just
tweeted immediately.
Who's going to jump? You know that's red meat for him. He's going to jump on that.
Of course.
He is obsessed with that whole thing.
By the way, we could argue about this, and maybe we will. I think by doing that, it actually helps Donald Trump.
It 100% does.
Because this is the profile of Donald Trump. If Donald Trump is left to his own devices and has nobody to scream at and yell at, then he has to be the president. And as we've seen, he hasn't gotten as much accomplished as he thinks he has or as he says he has. I don't know why she would do that. I also don't know why she would say that. This is a direct quote that I heard. I'm part of the resistance.
Yep.
Yes.
What does that mean?
No. Plus, nobody likes whiners. It just comes off as, doesn't it? It comes off as whiny.
Right.
And nobody likes that. So, again, even if she was correct in all these things, if she was right, what purpose does it serve? No. It makes her sound like a whiner.
I don't know.
Director Comey was the best thing that ever happened to Hillary Clinton in that he gave her a free pass for many bad deeds.
That was the tweet, right?
That was from
Donald
the President.
John Trump.
So we were looking this up yesterday about... Twitter followers. Because I don't do this. I'm not going
to
do this.
You said yesterday, I laughed out loud listening to it in the car on the way home. You were talking to Greenberg and you said, so you can put that on your Twitter page or whatever. It made me laugh.
Because
I know you have zero idea what it is.
On your Facegram.
Justin Bieber.
You have the Twitter on
your Instachat.
Yeah. Justin Bieber has like 40 million Twitter followers. Kim Kardashian has like 30 million Twitter followers.
Yeah.
We looked up somebody in terms of tweeting, the actual, each time you hit the keys. Mm-hmm. Now, you do a lot.
I do.
Right? You do a lot.
Guess how many followers SZA has.
Less than Katy Perry.
Well, she has 80 million.
Well,
someone between
80 million.
500,000?
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes those numbers are inflated. There are companies
Wilbon has a couple
that
of million.
Actually
yes.
Do oh, that
Wilbon.
For you.
Wilbon has
numbers.
A couple million.
Let me look. Wilbon has over a million.
But Wilbon doesn't tweet as much as some
under 500,000. It's sad. So failing.
I'm 50 shy of 10,000. And I feel when I get to 10,000, I can mobilize my arm.
Well, I have none and don't want to have any.
That's when we rally the troops.
Right, 10,000, yes.
What do you have in news?
By the way, I also want to point out, as we talked about Russia and their influence on the election, or alleged influence, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but on April Fool's Day, the Russian embassy changed their answering service, like when people calling up. And
they said,
like,
hi, this is Chatter?
Well, no, it was like, if you don't have to go to Chatter, it was like, if you want to speak to ambassador, press 1. To discuss events going on in Moscow, press 2. If you would like to undermine the election in the United States, press 3.
That's funny.
Yeah, they absolutely did. I didn't know the Russians had a sense of humor.
That's funny.
Michael Wilbon, 4.15 million.
Yeah, it's millions.
He's
tweeted
5,800 times.
How many times have you tweeted a lot more than that, haven't you?
I'm going to look quickly.
How many times have you tweeted?
Sadly, it's
going to
be
Dawson's
a lot more
Creek
than
more than that.
I'm at 104,000.
Jeez. That seems like a lot. It seems like you do that a lot to get
it. Kind of seems desperate.
Yeah. Searching for that million.
Look, when you compare it to Wilbon. Hey, everybody, I have something to say.
So, all right.
Not a fun day for the airlines as they had to sit in front of Congress yesterday. This quote from Representative Rob Woodall, the Republican out of Georgia. You know you're having a bad day when the group that lectures you on customer service is, in fact, Congress.
So, you know,
that's a show pony situation.
Oh, that's exactly the whole thing is.
Yeah. Dragging them down here to bang them around a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, that's
Well, they go home to their
group.
Constituents and they say, I don't know if you saw me, but I told Oscar Munoz. I mean, that's what it's for.
Yeah, and it gets, so they don't have to go home and talk to their constituents about health care.
Right. Yeah. So they say, well, next time you get on United Airlines, don't worry, we're cool now. That's what they'll say.
Right. But, if you're going to ship a bunny, just maybe buy some insurance.
Well, it depends if it's an extra bunny. Large bunny.
Yeah. Committee Chairman Bill Schuster of Pennsylvania said, there's something clearly broken when passengers have been treated the way they have. You've got to seize the day, because if carriers do not reform their passenger policies, Congress will impose rules and you're not going to like it.
Okay.
So there you go.
Carpe
diem. Can you get to that story about the parents?
Oh, this is just awful.
The parents.
All right, so this is Heather,
quote unquote, so pranks.
Yeah, the prank parents. Now they had their own YouTube channel. It was called Daddy 05 on YouTube, and you can have your own channel where you'd post stuff and you have subscribers to it.
Oh, because it said they made money. I thought YouTube was free.
Well, if you get enough clicks on it,
you can sell ads in it,
and then you make revenue from that. And they had, I think, about 700,000 or so people following their antics with their kids. And it was all sort of horrible stuff. And one that I actually watched when this story became public about a week ago was they started screaming at one of their sons, Cody, who's like 9 years old, blaming him for spilling ink on their carpet, when in fact it was disappearing ink and the parents had done that. And they just have the camera on him, they're screaming at him while he cries.
So they traumatized the kid?
Yes.
As a prank?
Yes, as a prank. And let's
see. What a hoot that is.
Yes.
That's funny.
Boom.
What? Yeah, these are some of them. These are, they've just listed here in the Washington Post some of the different titles of it. Cody loses everything. Ryan gets egged. Kid spaz out. Dad stink bubs the son's room. Jake gets left behind. So there are all these things. And then when people started to notice it, they were like, wait a minute, this is
awful.
This is terrible.
What are you doing here?
So now authorities have gotten in the way. And the birth mother of two of the kids now has temporary custody of them as a court has stepped in and said, all right, we've got to sort this out.
It was terrible.
It is absolutely terrible.
I saw one that just screaming and yelling at the kid. And the only thing I could think of, the only thing that would make it a little bit more palatable is if this was a routine. And if they coach the kids and they said, we are just performing now. That's all this is.
But what does that say about you? You said you need to have a few hundred thousand people to watch stuff your YouTube channel before you make money. What's it say about the people who want to watch that kind of
stuff?
Well,
I mean, this is lesser, but Kimmel always did, you know, the bit Kimmel does where he, like the kids for Halloween, he has people tape.
Oh, like
giving
their kids
broccoli for Halloween.
Yeah. Right.
And they're like, what? So it's kind of like that, but this is over an extended period of time.
And it's the same kid over and over again,
definitely,
right?
Exploitation.
It's the same kids getting targeted
their kids.
Each time?
And it's appeared to be a daily occurrence. Wow. So, you know, I mean, there would appear to be some sort of trauma involved with the children there.
I want to see them freshman year of college.
That's bad. Yeah,
there's going to be some issues.
What happened to Jimmy Kimmel's child?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he talked about
this
with a heart disease.
You didn't see the video?
I didn't see it with sound.
You need to watch it. You need to watch
Jimmy Kimmel a lot.
You need to listen to it.
He gets choked up. He's talking about his kid who was born with
heart disease, right?
Major problems.
Right.
He's, you know, and how he was tiny and how the nurses and everything, you know, they got the right proper medical care for him to use as like a broader plea/argument
for real healthcare.
Yeah, and like, you know, we need to focus more on our common humanity and what we have in common. Like, it doesn't matter if you have a kid who is born with these problems, you're not a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, you're just a person, and we need to think more along those lines.
He said it shouldn't matter how much you make.
Right, you shouldn't have to decide
whether or not your child is going to live.
Yes, you can afford to save this child,
Yeah, you really have to watch it. You got to listen to it. I mean, he really...
It's like 7 minutes, not long.
No, it's like
powerful.
No, the whole thing is 13 minutes.
Oh,
I
only
watched
the beginning of 7, okay.
The last half of it, because the last half of it is when he got political. Well, the last minute or so is when he got political on the whole thing. But really, any parent who's ever watched, who's ever brought a kid home from the hospital, you listen to him... And in the first 10 minutes, first 5 minutes, you're choking up because you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You completely.
I do
get
really
it.
Like him. I
yeah,
think
he's great.
Very
and very,
he's
genuine.
Talented. Very talented.
I think.
One final story. This is a disturbing story from the Commonwealth of Virginia, a small town called Waynesboro. I'm not overly familiar with it. It's in the Shenandoah Valley. Does anybody here know where Waynesboro is?
No, but we know where the Shenandoah Valley is.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, since last December, somebody has been taking cats and precisely shaving their underbellies or their legs. So there's been about seven cats over the course of this. The cats are domesticated, the house cats. They have, you know, collars on and all that.
How does this person get the cats?
They don't know. The police.
So this is not a grooming service
for
cats?
No, this is the cat's like, you know, the owner lets it out, and then the cat comes back at night, and it's like, why are you shaved and under your stomach?
Are the
you know?
Cats sedated?
That is unknown. It would not appear to be so.
Yeah, look for somebody with a lot of scratches on their face. Huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the police say we aren't sure what crime has been committed.
Yeah, they're not harmed.
But
otherwise,
please stop,
right?
Because
please
it's just stop. Icking us out.
it's just weird, man. I'm sorry, it's not against the law. It's just weird.
Just stop doing it. Yes.
We will take a break. When we come back, we will have Old Guy Radio. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the texture ad. Wouldn't it be great to be able to read all of your favorite magazines at a moment's notice? Introducing Texture, the app that lets you read all the latest news and culture magazines like Vanity Fair, New York Magazine, Interview, and tons more right on your tablet or phone anytime, anywhere. The Texture app has gone beyond delivering just the magazine itself. They've made it easy to find and enjoy the articles you want to read with daily recommendations, exclusive interactive features, videos, and more. Texture makes magazines easy, and there are so many great ones out there. Did they give a list of 1,000 magazines or something like that?
Yes, they did. Let me read through some of these.
Read about 5 of them.
Hot Rod, National Geographic, Kids, Popular Science, Reader's Digest.
They're still doing
ESPN.
Reader's Digest.
I didn't know that.
I get it.
Forbes, Vanity Fair.
They're still
Fair.
Doing Reader's Digest.
Field and Stream.
Have you been to a bathroom that doesn't have one?
Yes, in my house.
Okay.
My house, all we have in the bathroom is the Emmy.
What's wrong with that? That's
they also right. have Boy's Life and Nun's Life, if you'd like to read that.
Texture is searchable. You can mark what you like, check out back issues, view bonus video content. They even curate articles and magazines just for you or whoever you're giving Texture to this year. Texture is normally $9.99 a month, and you get over 200 magazines. But if you sign up right now at texture.com/Tony, you get a 14-day free trial. Why subscribe to just a couple of magazines when you can have all of your favorites on your smartphone or tablet all the time for way less? Plus, Texture was selected as one of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps. Right now, Texture is offering listeners to this famous podcast a 14-day free trial when you go to texture.com/Tony. That's 14 days to try Texture for free when you go to Texture, TEXTURE.com/Tony, texture.com, Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is, of course, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. This is Ragdoll, one of the great songs they've done. Frankie Valli, 83 years old today.
Wow.
83 years old. You don't expect that. They were the biggest hit makers in America in the 60s and 70s. I mean, even they had probably more hits than the Temptations and the Four Tops and the great Motown groups. I mean, they were flinging them out there. If you haven't seen Jersey Boys, you should. It's a great show. It's a great show.
It really
the stage
is.
Production, not the
not
movie.
Not the movie, right. No, the stage show, if you have the right people. You have info on this song?
I do. Apparently, Bob Gaudio, who helped write this song, was driving into the studio, and I guess the way went through the neighborhood, there were little kids that would come up and try and squeegee or wipe your windshields.
Yeah.
I guess it was kids did it back in the day, not adults who do it today. And there was this one little girl who was so short that she couldn't reach the windshield. All she could reach, and she was dressed in rags, and all she could reach was the driver's side.
And so he went home and wrote the song in 10 minutes.
That
seems to be the
so
theme
depressing.
This week.
Essentially,
Graham Nash writes a song in 10 minutes. Who yesterday wrote it in 20 minutes?
John Phillips. Yeah, John Phillips.
20
yeah.
minutes.
Gaudio, like all he had in his wallet was 20s, right? So instead of giving her pocket change, he threw a 20 down. And he said her eyes became as huge as saucers, and the image stuck in his head so that when he got to the studio, he's like, hey, guys, I've got a song.
It's a song.
It's amazing.
I wrote it in the car. Let's hit it.
And a two.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you're young.
Yes.
That's when the genius is, when you're young. You know, and the old Einstein, he wasn't that great.
Right.
He was the old Einstein.
Yeah, young Einstein.
Einstein. Very, yeah. very good. So people probably know, since I talk about this all the time, how I prepare for this particular show, at what time I awaken and what I watch on TV, and after I get the dog home, what I do. And one of the things that I do is I take notes on the newspaper. I don't have a newspaper today. They did not deliver my newspaper day. And this is a recurring, now it doesn't happen every day, but it has happened with increasing frequency, and it's making me very angry. I had the greatest...
Yes.
I had so the greatest true. Newspaper Death delivery star. Man in the history of the world.
Democracy Mark. Dies in darkness.
So it does. True.
Yeah, well, it does. You know, yeah, it's bad. I think, I'm pretty sure his name was Roberto Gomez. I'm pretty sure. And I sent
Gomez?
Him. Yes. And I sent him a healthy tip at the end of every year because he's the best.
Rolls of quarters.
He's, no, I wrote a check on this guy because he's the best. And I don't know if he's still delivering. The substitute delivery person about a month ago told me that he had taken ill. I don't know how serious it was. And I said, well, I like to get the paper really early. I like to get it around 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm up, and I use it to go to work. And I was assured that was going to happen, and I didn't get the paper at all today. Every once in a while. I know, I'm pretty sure he's not delivering it because he had an unerring sense of throwing it right by the fence. And the people or person or people who are delivering it now are flinging it way over the fence. So I know it's not
when
him.
When they fling it at all.
It can't, yeah, and today, and I didn't even bother to call and say, get me a paper, because they wouldn't be able to do it for another hour or two. And I leave the house, 7:15. I come here. We're ready to go. And now I have to take notes on a legal pad, which is not the worst thing in the world, but it has gotten me completely out of rhythm.
So sure. When you don't get a paper, you don't go online and read it?
Well, today, for the first
Leon,
time...
This is sorry, Tony, this is Leon, yeah.
Sorry,
today,
it's stupid question went Thursday. Here.
No, I did this. I should say. I did this. Today, I went on to the Washington Post buzzer, or whatever that thing is. No, on my little phone.
Buzzer?
With that
thing. App. Yeah. Oh, yes. App. Okay, got it.
The app.
When you press it buzzes.
I pressed it.
Right, buzzer.
And then it said, you know, local sports. And I couldn't, I didn't, usually, the treasure trove for stories is the Metro section. Mm-hmm. It's just got a million little
That's
things
where you
in
do
it.
Your best work.
Right.
Yes.
And so I couldn't Metro find fires. That. In other words, everything sort of is the same size in the headline, and I got bored scrolling. I couldn't do it the way I like to do it. I was able to get the sports stories, and that was fine, but I wasn't able to do the sort of work that I like to do to get ready for this particular show. And so it became more important to watch the television news in order to get those particular things. And it's just not it's not the way I prepare, and I don't know what to do about this, if this is going to be forever. Because, you know, newspapers want to stop printing.
Yeah.
That's not where the money is.
Right.
It costs them. They probably lose money for every paper they actually print. They'd love for you to just get it online. Don't you think, Chris?
Well, yes,
they'd
absolutely.
Love for you to just get it online.
They still make enough money from the ads that they sell in the newspaper. They make far less than they once did. But it does still make, I believe, at least the Post, the print edition made money. But it's because circulation is dropping. They just can't make enough money.
And they don't want to do it. Yeah. They don't want to do
Am
it.
Am I crazy? It seems to me that when I get my, I get both. I get the hard copy, and I also
me too.
Online subscriber.
Well, if you are a subscriber, as I've been for 40 years, you automatically get
you automatically
the online.
Get, yes. Exactly.
So that when you want to cancel your newspaper, if you're going away for a week or so and you don't want it to build up in front of your house, they say they used to refund you when that's all they had.
Oh, yeah.
Now they say there is no refund because you can access us online.
Yeah, that's right.
But it seems to me that the Metro section online is smaller.
Yeah,
than the
like
Metro
it.
Section.
That's how I felt.
Yeah,
that's how I felt.
Because I look at that, it's amazing how many of the stories are that are archived. Actually, it's stuff that came up a couple of days.
You
before.
Should.
And the style
you...
section doesn't. They don't seem to prioritize what they want you to read. I don't know.
This may be
what does
a dumb
that mean?
Question. The Post allows you to online. You can look at either the U.S. world one or the regional one. And
I don't know
what that
means.
If you click regional, you get a lot more local news.
Is that on my phone, too?
Yeah.
Because I have a small phone.
Yeah, top left of your phone page, I would assume.
What you want to do
is... I need to look at your phone.
When you turn your phone on, just yell representative over and over again.
Is that right?
So that was
yes,
bad.
That works,
I mean, that's just it
throws you off your rhythm.
Well, you're talking to a guy who just called his app a buzzer.
Yes, my phone buzzer.
It's a minor complaint. It's a minor complaint.
Well, but the newspaper thing is real because every morning
it's
you
habitual.
Have it with the notes on it
so and you know the older I get and the older everyone gets but at my age certainly this is true you begin to lose those things that formed the spine of your life. Those things are not necessarily available to you in the way that they used to be. And if I lose the newspaper, I'm just going to end up on a corner somewhere.
Well, you know, people under the age of 15 right now don't even know about writing notes.
Right.
They type everything.
Yeah.
They're using their thumbs for everything. Getting my kids to sit down and write something. I mean, getting them to write a card for Mother's Day is like a major chore.
It's tough.
And going forward, it's going to be even worse. Your kids probably won't do any writing. May not even learn how to write cursive.
They stopped teaching cursive in most schools.
Yep. There you go.
Most of my former students would write all of their early drafts on computers. And in the early staging, so much of the writing process is just putting something on paper so that you can see that process and you can learn from it. And they would just type, 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 delete, type, type, type. Yeah. And 50 minutes later, they'd have nothing. And they'd say, I'm stuck. And you'd want to say, well, put something down so we can work with it. We can workshop.
Wilbon and I take notes. And Mike takes less notes than I do, but he still, you see him with a pen and some paper. And that's rare now.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody we work with works solely on a computer.
When you're in a PTI meeting, like you're meeting before the show, I assume you have a meeting before the show to sort of chat. Do you have something like that?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I talked to Kelleher about what's
going
to be on
I was
the
just
show.
Wondering, is everyone else on their laptop and you and when Wilbon is there, you and Wilbon are not? I didn't know if that was...
Mike has a computer. Mike does stuff on computers.
Okay.
Mike takes his phone with him everywhere and is typing constantly because he tweets all the time. But when we sit on the set, he will still rely on paper and pencil. Yeah. I think Bonnie has bought for me the last remaining legal pads in the United States of America. And I'm curious about that. The one thing I'm curious about is I think people still have writing skills, if they choose to develop them, writing skills. But it would seem to me that you could, if you were a good writer, a law firm would hire you now. If you had a law school degree and were a good writer, you'd be worth your weight in gold. You'd be like a script doctor in Hollywood because nobody writes anymore. And if you could cogently write the arguments down for the case that you're making, they'd have to pay you hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, let me tell you how far it's gone. I was up covering the Baltimore riots, and the mayor, Michael Leonard, had come out with a press conference, and we were all lined up, and I'm the only one there with a pad writing notes down.
Yeah, most
everybody was up there
taking
their phone, taking down notes, transcribing this man as he's giving them quotes. And I'm going, how do you do that?
Yeah. It's impossible to me. Yeah.
I know people just use their phone as their recorder, too. Remember it used to have the recorders that you would, you know, the little
tape recorders.
No more. And you'd, like, play, but transcribe it back and play back. No more.
They don't have that
anymore.
Use
your phone.
No.
Then your phone can transcribe it, you know, just like if there's if there's a message that's left, you know, when people leave a message, it tries to... It's not perfect.
No, in fact, it's amusing to watch sometimes what it thinks.
It's not great.
I don't have
autocorrect. Like autocorrect.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say
There's
that.
There's a Brian Wilson song, I guess I just wasn't made for these times. And I think as you get older and older and older, you feel that way. We didn't get to the Nats. Should we get to the Nats?
Oh, sure.
You know, I just wanted to mention that the Nats last night, the Nats got involved in a close game last night.
Yeah.
It was Tanner Roark threw... He had the Gio Gonzalez moment where he was up to 125
pitches. I was there at
pitches.
The game. 33 in the first inning. Like, are you serious?
And he's a solid pitcher.
20 pitches before he got his first out.
Yeah, that's tough.
But really? He stayed in the game. And
he hung in there six innings.
He pitched better at the end of the game and saved one or two extra relief arms. So we all thanked
I got home in time to watch him give up two home runs in the same inning. When they went from 3-1 up to 4-3
down. See who they brought in to keep the game close?
Well, this is what I want to say. You can...
Unbelievable.
You can do this anytime you want. You can get 23 runs. God bless you. You're going to win. Pretty much you get more than 7 runs. You're pretty much going to win 80, 90% of the time. One of the things that was said last night at 4-3, it was either Carpenter or FP said, well, they've turned it over to the bullpen now, both teams. And I got that sickening feeling in the pit of my stomach.
It's not going
to
end well.
Because who comes out? Blake Treinen.
Oh, yeah.
Blake Treinen comes out.
Great
Blake Treinen is now working more slowly than anyone I have ever seen pitch. He looks at the batter. There were 5 times in an inning where the ump just waved it off because Treinen was taking
minutes
to deliver one pitch. What is... And, of course, he gave up a run. And then they brought in Blanton, who, of course, gave up a home run.
Immediately.
So you can have the 27 Yankees.
But if you can't hold the game close.
Slow down for a second. So the big issue is Blanton continues to give up home runs. Blake Treinen is lost in a field somewhere trying to figure out what role he will be. These are the two hottest offenses over the last month and some change. And so you have to remember that in the last three series, they've played Colorado. They played the Mets, who are basement dwellers right now, but are a division rival. And you now have the number one team in the NL West. So when you're playing,
which I didn't realize. Yes. I didn't realize that they were that good, Arizona. I had no idea. No. So I don't know any of their players.
They are up there with the Nats with the two hottest offenses. So we have to give the bullpen and the pitching staff a little bit of wiggle room there.
What do you
do? Not Treinen.
What do you do with Blake Treinen?
Well,
what do you do
with
him?
Have a suggestion. That,
I've said to deport him. Yeah, I think that's illegal.
Well, right now
not for
it's
long.
Illegal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It may not be for long. Yeah.
Give it time. The thing I notice is just how the ball really explodes out of his hand.
He's got dynamite stuff. It really sinks.
Sinker is just some of the best stuff in the majors, I've heard.
I'm going to
fairly
use this
positive
word,
Santangelo.
And maybe this is because I am so hardened in my position. It's agony for me when he gets out there. I have no expectations that anything positive is going to happen.
Nor
I just
should
don't.
You.
I just don't.
I mean, nothing positive has happened this entire year.
The sad
him.
Thing is he's going to need some of those early summer, you know, toss away games where you put him out and there's nothing at stake to just build up that confidence. This is going to be a 2-3 month building process to just get him back maybe to where he was last year, or we have another Drew Storen on our hands where the smallest slight just completely crumbles. Unravels.
So then go into the locker room, smash your hand against the locker, break your hand, that's it.
Well,
break
the good, well, the good thing is that, I mean, right now they've got a stretch. Don't they have a stretch coming up now where they're not really playing like tough teams coming up like the next
Michael ran like, through that the schedule is a little bit it
so maybe
eases
this is,
up. Although the Mets are so terrible right now that we ran through them. But the Rockies had a good record when we played them. I mean,
well, the NL West is top to bottom right now. You have three teams going down to the Dodgers who are all very good.
They're good. Mm-hmm. They're good. But go ahead.
I was just going to say, by the way, you talk about Treinen pitching so slowly now.
Yes.
I've noticed because I've been to a couple of games recently. I don't know if you guys have seen this in center field. There's actually a countdown clock. I think it's a precursor to the pitch clock that they're talking about. And it's when it gets to zero, nothing happens. But I think that the
Treinen still got the ball.
Yeah, I
he's
think
still
that,
holding
I honestly,
the ball.
I honestly,
he's not even in
the
set.
But it's interesting to see how quickly pitchers move and how often they go past zero. But I think that that's
he's a turtle.
Well, yeah,
he's a turtle.
He would suffer more from this than anyone else if they
that game
this.
Last night. The whole thing felt long. I mean, that first inning was 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's tough.
The first inning was 45 minutes long. It was ridiculous.
Diamondbacks 17-11.
One small note: Sidney Crosby. He's not going to play in Game 4. He's not going to play again in this series.
Probably not.
He's not going
to
play.
Hard to see it.
He's not going to play. Yeah. He's suffered tremendous amounts of games lost through concussions. He may be prone to concussions. He's the best player in hockey, but he's not going out there anymore. Yeah. I think that series
given
is a total turnaround.
Given his concussion history, it's hard to imagine they roll him out there.
Cannot put him out
there. Does that mean you now like the Caps' chances?
I do. Yeah. I think we're in turnaround on this one right now. I do. I think so.
I think if they win the next one, I doubt if they lose the next one, they can win three in a row, though. You think they can win three in a row?
Well, I thought LeBron James won three in a row.
That's true, too.
You know, I saw that happen. Maybe you didn't.
Believe
but I thought you did.
I'll believe that when I see LeBron on our skates.
Yeah. Okay. We'll take a break. We'll come back with a jingle, yes, an email.
That's right.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Ask Michael Nevis. How about them apple sacks? C-H-A-T-T-E-R-S, right?
No, there's no S. There's no S. That's a great tune by Kirsten Ohnstadt.
Can I say
that's
one thing
that's the Bay
about the,
City Rollers.
About the name?
Chatter.
So when I was coming this morning, I thought, I'll just type it into Waze. You know, I'll put Chatter in there. Didn't come up. still comes up as Chads in ways. So hey, we're going to have to talk to a man
Google
about
Maps,
that.
Google Maps, it comes up as Chatter.
Yeah, I looked at Google Maps to see how far it was. Uh-huh. Yep. Comes up
Chads.
As Chatter.
I was like, I don't know any place named Chads.
No, we've killed that
happy.
Name.
No, I said I spent a long amount of time on the phone this morning with the internet talking about that, getting that fixed.
And it's not Chatters.
It's Chatter.
Yeah, right. Chatters.
Oh, let me say thanks to ESPN's Brian Windhorst for coming on with me today. Are you showing it to me?
The closest thing here is Chatterbox in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. It's right down the street.
Let me thank the sponsors, Sherry's Berries, Texture, and ZipRecruiter. Please support them the way they support the podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. What we're going to do, I think, is get a vinyl sign now and tape the vinyl sign outside so people can see Chatter and say open for breakfast. And let's make it as tacky as we can.
That vinyl sign
so that it looks like a golden
appealing.
Corral.
I was going to say, that sounds really classy.
Yeah, no, let's not have any
Can
class.
We get one of the sign guys with the spinning signs?
Oh, what would stand
those
outside?
Those guys are amazing. Oh.
I pay $10 an hour.
How do those guys learn how to do that?
It's fantastic.
That's cool.
And I want them to dress in a chicken outfit too.
Oh, 100%.
Well, then people think you're selling mattresses here.
So great, Kevin Clock in Potomac, Maryland.
Are we selling mattresses here?
Yesterday, my boss and two colleagues descended into the Medical Center Metro, only to discover black smoke emanating from the station.
Uh-oh.
My boss knocked on the station manager's door to inform him that perhaps a call to the fire department might be useful. The station manager said, "Oh, there's a fire? I just came on shift." Meanwhile, it was apparently in bounds to pay and go deeper into the station despite the potential respiratory challenge. Sure enough, the track was on fire. My colleagues emailed me a picture, which is attached. Instead of calling 911, I, of course, texted them not to worry. There are fewer fires on Metro this year than last.
Metro, now with fewer fires.
That's comforting.
From Stephen Lewis in Fredericton in New Brunswick, Canada, one of the Atlantic provinces. Ooh. Fresh from Chatter is the new podcast with sommeliers Luke Russert and Saliza named Wine Chat. Today they will be discussing Kendall Jackson and the new gas station wine movement in Napa and tasting a wonderful 1984 Bordeaux from the Kenwood Sunoco in Bethesda.
Kenwood Sunoco.
Dr. David A. Lake, can I come and camp at Now Announced Studio at Chatter because a Hallmark Channel movie is being shot in my neighborhood on Tybee Island in Georgia. Principal photography for the summer romance flick Love at the Shore started last week and will continue this coming week, so I need to evacuate. The only thing worse than coming home to a Hallmark Channel movie playing on TV is having a Hallmark Channel movie being shot all around you.
By the way, that's a great movie, Love It on the Shore.
Does it have a gazebo?
It's a gazebo, but there's a misunderstanding, but in the end, they get together. So it's great. Very nice.
Do they find love in an elderly age?
So this is Ben Danner from Southport, North Carolina, who writes, could someone tell Mr. Saliza that not only is the Wells Fargo tournament here in Wilmington this week, in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's also time for One Tree Hill Convention. Do you know what that is?
What?
The One Tree Hill Convention?
Oh, it's another
convention?
Show. It's like a Dawson's Creek-esque show.
Oh, yes, One Tree Hill. Yeah,
Did you watch that?
The WB. No, I don't cheat on Dawson.
Okay, it's good to know.
You've always been faithful.
From Charlie Burtz in Springfield, faithful. Virginia. When you say overnight kitchen renovations, does that include a steak toaster? No, we have a real oven here, I think. George Lyle in Martinsville, Virginia. I recently drove 7 hours from my small town on the North Carolina border to the intersection of Wisconsin and Jennifer with 1N to make a pilgrimage to your new restaurant. The service was excellent, the food tasty. I was disappointed I did not get to see you, Gary Williams, or any of the other celebrity owners despite hanging around for several hours. Oh well, I'll have to make a second trip. Can you tell me where you came up with the name Bowie Monger for the joint? P.S. The Gatsby Arrow sandwich was great.
Story.
Can you add some chili? Jordan Casey, who is the Botswana Little.
Oh, yeah.
He was here from Botswana.
He was here, right?
He says, you know me, and I would have thought this was pronounced Lesotho, but it's pronounced Lesotho.
That's how you say that?
Lesotho, he says, and read emails from me before, African Little Unite. Yeah. Maybe we can have a jingle fest in Johannesburg. That's Jordan Casey in Masero, Lesotho. I guess he's not the Botswana Little. He's the Lesotho Little, reaching out to the Botswana Little.
Oh, I
which
see.
Which is, I guess, how that happens.
Little's helping Littles.
Yeah, which is wonderful. We don't have any time.
You've got about 8 seconds.
No, it's no.
Plenty of time.
No, it's not. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
How much do you think I can bench press?
bound, lost and found. It's a battle with a heart of gold. Thought I'd see it through, but the devil made me do it. It's a story I never told. Spent a little time never around, and I guess I never will. Well, I left my love in Wichita, now I can't see it still. Devil made me do it, it's a story I never told. Spent a little time never around, and I guess I never will. Well, she sang a song about what you done. Now I can't see it still when a little I feel. We'll be right back.
So do I, she said, hey, you got it. So do I in the red eye.